Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Hello, Little Fakes 99. Scott Tamani, Mr. Brendan Cornan. We're a rare Tuesday appearance, but welcome, Brendan. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 14. Dow Futures on 114. NASDAQ Futures up 44. Oil down 65 cents. 10-year yield 3.17. We're actually down a little last night. Of course, Sunday night, we were down 23 in the spoos, and we ended up being up on the day at some point and then sold off on the close. Now we're kind of making back what we sold off on the close. So it's a very bizarre market there. You not only don't necessarily want to be short because it bounces right back up, you don't really want to be long either because there's no rally around that somebody doesn't seem willing to sell. So kind of entered kind of a no man's land sort of market. Well, I did not even know he was sick, Brent. Paul Allen, dying at 65.
I didn't know either. I was very shocked to hear that and that, hearing that it was from leukemia. I think I had known that a few years ago that he had leukemia, but you know, I thought it was in remission.
It was, and then it came back, and I think he got the "don't worry, we'll fix it this time too" story, and I guess it was a worry. You know, it's you never really know, boy, when that stuff starts to. It's I don't know. It's the no, it's a shame. He owns what maybe the Seattle football team and. Which
Portland. Portland yep. Trailblazers.
Yeah, but he owns the Seahawks too, right?
Right.
That's right. He owns the Seahawks and the Portland Trailblazers.
Wonder, how do you think that's going to pan out, Brendan?
Well, I think there'll be a nice big fight over who gets his interests.
Yeah.
Unless he's already got that in his financial plan and his estate planning.
I remember, for people who don't necessarily remember the call me here, Matty. Why don't you Google the guy's name, Arthur Norris? And, what was the Norris guy's name, first name? It was Arthur Wirtz.
Arthur Wirtz, you mean the guy from the Blackhawks?
Yeah, but who was the Norris Trophy and all that stuff? At one point, when hockey was in its infancy, why don't you dig up that name, Matty?
James Norris.
Yeah, I don't stumble all over this. I think he always owned the Red Wings. At one point, he saved the Blackhawks by coming in and buying like half the Blackhawks, didn't he, Matty? And didn't he own part of, was it Boston, too, at one point? I mean, he basically was hockey. And he kept the NHL together when there were six teams. And I think he was part of Madison Square Garden Corp. They owned Madison Square Garden.
James E. Norris, age 72, from Chicago. Died at age 72.
Yeah.
Originally, he was born in Montreal, Quebec, died in Chicago. Was a Canadian-American businessman operating companies in the grain and cattle industries and owner of the Detroit Red Wings of the NHL. He also had significant ownership interests in the Blackhawks, the New York Rangers. He's often referred to as James Norris Sr. to distinguish him from his son, James D. Norris. He's a member of the National Hockey Hall of Fame, and as are his sons, James and Bruce Norris.
Well, the
James Norris Memorial Trophy is handed out to the defenseman, best defenseman every year.
I'm thinking he, I think he originally owned the Chicago Stadium or was one of the people who owned it, and I think he, I you know whatever we're on the air, so I got to be somewhat careful, but I think he put Dollar Bill Wirtz as the executor of his will. And I'm going to say that was about a 15-20 year fiasco. And I think Dollar Bill ended up with the stadium out of there and ended up with, I think, all the Hawks. Somehow or another, the rumors I hear is that be careful who's the executor of your will.
Not that you've got a lot to say about it at that point.
No, no. But Well, that's essentially what happened to the Bears,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that they had the, well, you're the attorney. Do people still do that, the generation flipping estates?
They try to.
Well, not at the rate is so low.
Mm-hmm.
Still do it?
Yeah.
So how exactly does that work? I know that was Dan Quayle. His father jumped. I'm going to say this. If you figure out a way to where all the money goes to the grandkids, right, and all the power goes to the grandkids, that somehow you can, you don't escape probate, but you escape.
Now, there's generation skipping taxes that you can avoid through estate planning. But, you know, I don't know what has changed recently, since I ever looked at it. It's been a long time since I've looked at any of that kind of law. I don't know where things stand right now as far as tax law changes, but that's a big thing for estate planners to make sure to minimize taxes that are passed around. You often will skip generations.
Well, I think that's what Dan Quayle, his kids essentially had all the money. Now, he was never broke, but he didn't have access to his old man's incredible amount of cash. And I think that's what the Halluses did. Is George Sr. jumped it to the McCaskies, I believe, had 9 kids, and the Hallis Muggs had 3. So essentially, Virginia's group got 3/4 of the voting shares and 3/4 of the money.
Mm-hmm.
But the power evidently is in the trustee, not the trustee, the executor of the will, that was Muggs, his son. And when Muggs died early, he had a heart attack in a racquetball court or something?
Something like that.
And
he was very young.
And he was in his 40s, and he was amazingly well-liked.
Yes.
And everybody loved Muggs.
Well, how could you not like a guy named Muggs?
Well,
I mean, come on. If you got
that's
a nickname
true.
Like Muggs, you got to be a good guy.
We had a trader that traded for us. His name was Mug, too, and he was a good guy. It's a character. But tell you a story about Mug one of these days, but had to do with over at Broker's Inn drinking shots. What are the shots? The blowjob shots?
And he was, okay, there's got to be a story there.
Yeah. Well, these Asian guys are sitting at the next table, and the idea is you bend over and you just grab the shot glass in your mouth, right? And you pick the thing up and you take the shot that way. You don't use your hands. Well, Broker's got these big honking shot glasses, right? So these Asian guys kept going, mouth too small, mouth too small. what are you guys? Anyway, but it was funny as hell. They kept trying, and they kept spilling all over themselves. But they were game, I'll say that for them. But anyway, so Muggs dies early. So then the executor fell to Ed McCaskey. So he's now got all the power because he's got essentially 9 votes, and Muggs' family's got 3. So the Muggs kids are not even part of the Bears anymore.
You never hear anything about them.
Well, they were forced. They were bought out, and so you got to be real careful when you do this because everything has a, the best line in physics is every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
It's all the unintended consequences. You try to do things that haven't done a certain way, and then when you do that, the consequence is going to be completely unintended.
And it's sort of interesting. I don't know how this guy's set up for his two teams and the rest of his stuff, because the guy's got, doesn't he have like the world's biggest yacht too?
Oh yeah, I saw his yacht. It was parked down off of the coast of Ushuaia, at the base of Argentina.
Where the hell is Ushuaia? What's it doing down there?
He would troll around the Antarctic Ocean and the Southern Pacific and Southern Atlantic Ocean from time to time.
Well, that's a long drive down there.
It is a long drive.
I doubt he went for the... I bet he flew down and picked it up down there. I bet he wasn't anything all the way down there.
I bet you're right. Flying down to Buenos Aires, and
how big was it? Wasn't it like 100 and some feet?
It was huge.
It wasn't like a converted frigate or destroyer or something.
I was on one of those when I went to Antarctica. It was on an old Russian trawler, an old Russian sub chaser that was built at the end of the Cold War, and Paul Allen Jatt was bigger than this, and the trawler that we were on. Had a crew of 50 Russian sailors.
50?
50. The crew was 50. And it held about 125, 130 passengers in addition to the crew of 50. And Alan's yacht was bigger than the boat that we were on. So, I mean, our boat slept 125 people plus, like, all together between 175 and 200 people could be crammed into this boat that we took across the Drake Passage to Antarctica. And his yacht was bigger than that.
And his was rigged for that kind of, those kind of seas and that kind of bouncing around and,
yeah.
Wow.
It had a reinforced hull to break through the ice, but I don't think that he took it down into the seas of Antarctica, but he was in the Antarctic Ocean off the coast of Ushuaia.
So that thing was built from scratch. It wasn't a converted something.
No, it was not. It was not converted from something else. It was built to his specifications.
Wow, we're talking in the bees, I imagine.
Yep, I'm sure it was. It wasn't cheap.
What does it cost to run that thing?
No idea.
Yeah, I'm gonna read it.
I don't even know how big the crew is. You know, it might have a different crew than the ship that we were on. But I mean,
it's probably more electronics, but probably less. But still.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Well, the one here didn't. The Blackhawk was the biggest one in Chicago, right? And they got caught in a storm up in Lake Superior. It didn't hurt the boat much, but I guess it did all kinds of crap to the chain and the crystal and everything bouncing around. I guess it shook up the insides pretty good, but the boat was fine. Hmm. I mean, a lot of times the boat's fine, and you and the stuff in there aren't so good in one of these storms. But anyway, this is, you know, it's all interesting stuff. We'll see what happens with that. I don't know that it's going to affect any of the management or anything, but I would say probably not. But you know, we'll see. But I mean,
he was probably a hands off guy. I don't see him in the mold of. What's his name? The guy who had the Raiders.
Jerry Jones or Mark Cuban or...
Right.
Or the Raiders was...
Al Davis.
Al Davis, yeah.
Well, Davis was... A lot of those guys played ball, right?
Well, Jerry Jones played at Arkansas in college.
Wasn't he roommates with Jimmy Johnson?
I think so, yeah. They were at least teammates if not roommates. And that's why he brought him in to coach the Cowboys.
And they don't speak anymore, do they?
Nope.
Well, what was the falling out there?
Jimmy Johnson told him, you go sit up in your office and let me coach the team.
Oh, yeah, you can't tell him that. Al Davis, I think, had been a player of some kind, too.
He was also the manager and the head coach for a while. He took a turn on the sidelines for a while.
Well, then there was George Halas.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he was the...
player coach.
Well, not only that, he was the owner. Mm-hmm. He sold the tickets. He wouldn't let anybody else know the money.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ticket sales were over... He went and got in his uniform, and he coached, and he played.
Mm-hmm.
So. Al Davis never played.
Okay.
But he did coach.
He did coach, yeah. He played junior varsity baseball for Syracuse. That was the height of his athletic career.
I thought he'd done something where he thought he was an expert.
No.
Well, he thought he was an expert.
But he did coach, and then...
But I thought he at least would have played, like, you know, junior college ball or something, but he didn't. He played baseball. That's wild.
Yeah. And he wasn't good enough to play varsity in college.
Well, you know who, another thing about George Halas, you know who sort of replaced him in New York? With Babe Ruth.
Really?
He was an outfielder for the Yankees, but I think he'd hurt his hip or something. Not Babe Ruth, it was he played somewhere, but he hurt his hip, I think, during the war, didn't he? Or something. Some story with
you
George.
You know, you're shaking the cobwebs loose about something.
Oh,
you know,
Babe Ruth was the 20s. I mean, Halas wasn't that old. Yeah, Halas was that old. Halas would be, what, 100 and something?
Well, Halas was born in 1895.
Yeah, so he was kind of contemporary of those guys.
Yeah. Because didn't he start the Bears in, like, the 20s?
Yeah, he was
21, 22?
Staley, the Hutmobile factory.
Mm-hmm.
In Canton, Ohio. And they were the what? They were the Decatur Staleys.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And who got him to move to Chicago, but somebody did. Anyway. Well, it was a dry cleaning plant? Wasn't that the Staley's? Wasn't that the sponsor?
Could have been. I don't remember.
Well, the Packers were the Knights of Columbus. Now it's Packard Charities. Anyway, it's a long history of this stuff that we go into from time to time. But Brendan, while you're here, all kinds of crazy stuff with politics every place.
Yeah.
Now we've got.
By the way, Chief, before you change the subject, after Halas played minor league baseball, eventually earning a promotion to the New York Yankees, where he played 12 games as an outfielder.
Yep.
Before injuring his hip, the popular myth was that Halas was succeeded as the Yankees right fielder by Babe Ruth, but in reality, it was Sammy Vick.
Okay.
Later that year, Hallis played for the Hammond Pros and received about $75 per game.
Yeah, they were... my uncle played for some outfit called, and this is during the Depression, the West Side All-Stars. There were all kinds of pro leagues. Not all kinds. There were a lot of, there were more than one pro league at the time, Brandon and Maddie. And my uncle played for one of these teams. And they weren't in the NFL, but they were kind of right below it. And they would have exhibition games. So they're playing in like Stagg Field or one of those joints. They're playing the Bears. And the my second uncle, the younger one, said that they were actually beating the Bears like 10-3 at halftime or something. So Hallis, you could hear him yelling at everybody. He goes, he's going to fine everybody like $75 a man if they didn't win by three touchdowns or something. Well, of course, they had not put Nagurski in the game yet. So they put Nagurski in the game. Marco goes, it was unbelievable. Like three guys hit him from the team, and he goes, oh, they're all really good tacklers. But these guys are 195 pounds. I mean, they were guys that worked, you know. I mean, and they were probably in fantastic shape, you know. But they bounced off him like he bounced off a bull. And he carried the ball three times, got three touchdowns, and it was it. But I said he was absolutely a man among men. He was 245. He was a monster, and he could run. When he came back and after he retired, he came back, needed him, and he was an all pro tackle for two or three years. But he was just a huge man that could play in everything. It was like. Well, you know, we didn't talk about yesterday, Maddie. Jim Taylor dying, huh?
Yeah, over the weekend.
Yeah, he was a tough mole.
He was another guy who was ahead of his time as far as his ability to run.
Yeah,
because he had 5,000 1,000 yard seasons in a row in the '60s.
Yeah,
with fewer games,
and as a fullback.
Yeah, that was a time when 1,000 yards really meant something.
Well, God, yeah. I mean, it was 14 games. That was tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had the sweep with him and Horning. But, you know, I think Horning might have been bigger than him. Horning's a big man. I mean, talk about sandbagging. I went to one of these Notre Dame functions, and they were giving a award out to both Pat Hayden for doing something, for both being an announcer. I mean, he was a terrific announcer. And then they were giving an award out to Horning. And Horning was always kind of a odd duck. Imagine that. So they're in the elevator together, and I step in. There's three of us. And at the time, I was 6'3" and a half or so. And Pat Hayden is listed as what? 6 foot, 185. And Horning was what? 6'2", 195 or something? Horning's taller than me. He's a huge guy. We talk about a sandbagger. Pat Hayden, if he was 5'10", 5'10" and a half, I'd be stunned. The two of them look like Mutt and Jeff standing next to each other. And allegedly, there were 2 inches difference, Maddie, and there had to be 6 inches difference. I mean, maybe more. And Horning looked like he could have played tackle.
By the way, you were right that Horning was bigger than Taylor.
Yeah.
They both weighed 215, but Horning was 6'2", and Taylor was 6'4".
I'm going to say Paul Horning never played 215 in his life. He was easy 225, 230, and he's 6'5", or 6'4".
Very possible, but he's listed at 6'2", 215.
Like I said, he was a sandbagger from day one. But you know, it's funny if you see these guys after they play, the linemen get smaller and the backs get bigger because
mm-hmm.
the backs are huge. So what's his name, Franco Harris in Las Vegas? Yeah, the guy looked like a refrigerator, and he just was this huge guy. You can imagine that guy coming at you fast. How the hell do you tackle him? And maybe you make a dive at his knees, but you sure can't go up and try and stop him up high. It'd be like running against a freight train. But, you know, you don't realize how some of these guys are, I mean, what spectacular athletes they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're not, I mean, you don't get to that top of that food chain without being good. I mean,
well, also think about the guy who stops him running, you know, if he gets into the secondary, being a safety or a cornerback trying to hit him.
Well, that's when people talk about the steroid era, and who knows if we're exactly through the steroid era in football or wherever, but, everybody just assumes, you know. Nobody would assume, you know. You make an ass out of yourself and everybody else. You assume that it's the 270-pound lineman who wants to play at 300,
mm-hmm.
and everybody thinks that that's. And in reality, if you talk to you know John's brother Pete, who was there for 5 years, or Eric, or somebody who actually knows a lot of people, or his brother played pro ball, it was the 190-pound safety
right.
that really felt he needed to play at 210
mm-hmm.
so he could tackle guys like Franco Harris.
Yeah.
I mean at that level, when you don't have an ounce of fat on you, and the difference between 190 and 210 is pretty dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have. Did you guys ever go to a full boxing match, like a Golden Gloves or something like that, where there's people going up at every different level?
Mm-hmm.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
It's... When you look at the difference in size of people,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd say, okay, what's the like the 115 class? Well, the 115 class, those guys come up to essentially my armpits, right? I mean, they're tiny guys because they're nothing but muscle. There's not an ounce of fat in any of them. But so the difference between being like 125 and 140 is dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy's what? Probably 3 inches taller, a lot bigger. I mean, 15 pounds of solid muscle and skeleton is a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not like you sat on a sofa for 2 weeks and ate pizza and gained 15 pounds. It's not the same thing. I mean, for somebody to... the difference between a middleweight at 165 and like somebody who's 140, they could never box each other. I mean, one shot from the middleweight and the other guy'd fly out of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about a safety, you know, who's absolutely ripped at 190, all of a sudden playing at 210, it's a big difference for him and the guy who he's hitting.
Yeah, and I agree with you that it's the... The mid-level players and the guys who are just hanging on who are more likely to use steroids more than the big studs.
But it's also you think the guys that have to play on Thursday night now, if they could, they wouldn't be popping a steroid on Monday or Tuesday?
Oh, they'd have to, just to recover from the Sunday game.
To play the 14-16 game schedule,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you need some help. When you think, at our age, Brennan, you see people going to try and play golf at the ninth hole, they're popping the Advil,
mm-hmm.
for God's sake. I mean, it's sort of the same thing. But then when we come back, we're going to talk some...
kind of like mile 22 of a marathon.
Yeah, well, that's right. By the way, you never even told us about that. You didn't tell us. So everybody, you got married, and nobody tried to run out?
Nope. We had all the kids there. All the grandkids were in the condo. And Val and I exchanged vows and exchange rings.
Maddie, I thought you were going to become an online preacher. You could have gone over there and made a few bucks.
It's not a bad gig. I should do that.
You should.
Do I have to get ordained?
No, you're online and
get a certification?
Yeah, you get a certification.
Yeah, we had an officiant who had a license. I forget the name of the church, Universal Church or something like that.
Church of what's happening now?
Yeah. And he was qualified to marry us in the eyes of the law and God.
Well, see, Bridge would have done it. She's a real judge. She would have mm-hmm. done it. S&P futures still up 14. We look like we're going to the moon here today. We'll see. We'll come back with Mr. Joel Uncannon.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters, the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Sharks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Brendan Cornett, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. At Walmart earnings take a little bit of a hit because of this Flipkart deal, but shares are only down about 60 cents, so it's not that big of a deal. S&P futures up 14, Dow futures up 140, NASDAQ futures up 53, oil down 59 cents, 71.19, 10-year yield 3.17. Over in Europe, we still have a little bit of a mixed bag. These guys, even yesterday when we were up, they didn't want to go up so much. DAX up 54.5%, FTSE down 13.2%, CAC around up 22.4%, so generally up, but not unanimously. Nikkei bounced back 277, it's 1.2%, but they have been getting rocked. Shanghai down 21.8%, Hang Seng up 17, call that flat. So again, not much of a recovery over there, if at all. Oil down 59 cents, Brent down 59 cents exactly. Spread is exactly $9. Natural gas, another 3 cents, 327. RBOB up 1.94, and Joel's gonna explain to us why the hell this natural gas is going from 274 to 327 in probably 2 months. Not exactly sure why that is. Oil can understand with the Iranian and Saudi situation. Silver up 5 cents, gold up another 260, 1232. It was 1190 a couple weeks ago. That's a big run up in gold. Anyway, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a relatively good start, although we did have an earlier crash on the Kennedy on the inbound side just before Armitage Avenue that was causing some delays. Apparently that's all clear now, but we're an hour from O'Hare into downtown because of that earlier crash heading into the circle. From Montrose, 38 minutes. The express lanes are at 25 minutes. So if you're taking the express lanes, you're still in good shape on the Kennedy, but expect stop-and-go traffic as that earlier crash set things back. Outbound side looks okay, about 40 minutes out to O'Hare from downtown. Eden's looking good too. Normal traffic volumes on the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Out in the suburbs, we had one earlier crash, I-90 eastbound just before Route 59 in the northwestern burbs out near Streamwood. But that is all that's out there in the suburbs. So everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, a relatively nice day for mid-October. Lots of sunshine, mild temperatures, a high of 57. Right now it's clear and 37 going up to the upper 50s. For our Phoenix listeners, a cool day in the Valley of the Sun by their standards. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 69. Right now it's clear and 60. In sports, Packers were down late and they rallied back to tie and then ultimately win the game 33-30 over San Francisco. Green Bay, 9.5-point favorites, nowhere near covering, but they got the win up at Lambeau, so they're now tied with Minnesota, percentage points behind the Bears for second place in the NFC North. Bears remain in first place at 3-2. And in baseball, game 3 of the NLCS, it was those Brewers shutting out the Dodgers 4-0. Milwaukee leads 2-1. Chief.
So, just as I was mentioning last night over an adult beverage, nobody gives a rat's behind. If you've gotten, especially with this administration, nobody gives a rat's behind if some dictator somewhere that you need for oil wasted a news person. And here we have this morning, BlackRock won't cut ties if it turns out Saudi Arabia ordered Khashoggi's murder, Larry Fink, another fine human being on this one. Joel, how are you, bud? It was an editorial comment. I just had to throw that in there.
That's okay. Hey, Chief, that was not earnings by Walmart. They don't report until November
15th.
Right. That was lowered guidance.
You're correct. I'm sorry.
Pressure on the retailers.
I was looking. I was reading the Goldman Sachs earnings are set to come out, and then I saw the Walmart thing, and I put the two together, which I shouldn't have.
Okay. Be careful on these bank earnings. So far, J.P. Morgan was a big fade off their beat. Bank America, same thing yesterday, opened up higher, gave it back, crawled its way back. So, and Goldman was higher in the pre-market, starting to fade too. So far, early into the earnings seasons, it's been a little bit of the fade of the earnings, if they're real good.
Are we at the point here where we're at least, we're buying dips, but we're also selling rallies here pretty heavy. Looks to me.
I was just gonna mention that, big old trading range here. We had to break down. A lot of people anticipating the test of that low that we have last week. That hasn't happened, and then we rally, and it looks like we're just going to rip again. So it's tough. It's a big old trading range here, hoping that a good earnings season is going to pull us out of it to the upside.
I just got Goldman's flashing across here, 628 versus 530. They always beat. That's their shtick because they don't give any. Well, they don't give any guidance, right? So somebody just makes a pop estimate and then they always beat it.
The financials overall, 2018 have been a serial underperformer. They peaked earlier in the year. It's been the FANG stocks. So from a technical perspective, these stocks are still in a downtrend even with rising interest rates. So that's a little bit worrisome. The other value stocks are picking up slack in the market. For people that are, trading this Goldman Sachs, just be wary. You got a pair of highs from the last two sessions. They come in right at 217. So if it holds above 217, looking for a rally in Goldman Sachs, below 17, looking for yesterday's close at 215.22.
So why didn't you come on the show about 2 months ago and say, take all your money at everywhere and put it in natural gas? It hadn't moved in 10 years. Now it's up.
I know. I was just looking at the chart. I mean, it's a chilly day here in Michigan, so a cold snap, a cold winter. People are anticipating that. Also, when you look at natty gas and oil, a lot of it's supply and demand. There's been some deficits here in the storage data. And it's also cyclical, right? You said it's been in a bear market for 10 years. You get all the commercials loaded up on the short side here. You had oil kind of leading the way in the sector. So a lot of it's anticipation of a cold winter with low storage. And if you look at it, I mean, if you really want to get excited about it, it peaked in 2014, around 8.18. So this rally could just be getting started in it. I mean, it's still just climbing off that 2017 low. I don't like to trade. I hate like the, all the decimal points in there, you know, 3.001, 3.277. But so far, high the move, above 338. Looks like there's more upside. But it's still, looking at it on your monthly chart, it's just starting to turn up now.
So there's no ETF for that, is there? It's just not that they're, I hesitate to even mention a oil or gas ETF for that. USO is the worst product ever invented. It's still on the market somehow. How is that thing still listed?
I don't know. It's frustrating. You're referring to the USO here?
Yeah. When it came out, oil was...
Any of those ETFs, I mean, if you're bullish oil, then buy oil. Buy oil futures. If you're bullish natural gas, because, you know, just the decay in those things, the expenses, it just seems like they never move. Maybe a good day trading vehicle, but if you want to do long-term investing and you're better off in the commodity. They're more volatile, but it's hard.
I don't get how they're listed. I mean, when oil came out, when they came out, oil was like 75, and they were 75. Now oil's 75, and they're 12.
I know. It's just the decay and the expense ratios on that. So rolling over that, you know, to get the new barrels in there. I don't understand it either. Don't trade it. Like I said, stick with the actual commodities. If you think natural gas is going higher, open up the futures account, put the money in there, and be prepared for a wild ride. They move around. Those futures move around pretty good.
Well, I'm glad you guys, I watched the game Saturday after we got back from the Notre Dame game. I'm glad you guys, cause I'm thinking of you guys, basically your butt kicked by Wisconsin, then you're going on the road to Penn State and Ohio State. That didn't look good, but you managed to come back and look pretty good.
Who are you referring to?
Michigan.
Well, you said our butt kicked by Northwestern.
No, I'm sorry. So I thought it was Wisconsin. If you'd gotten your butt kicked by Wisconsin, then heading out on the road, then it would have been tough.
Well, I hope everyone, all our listeners out there, faded me, because I was very cautious on that spread, which Vegas was. They just kept moving it out, so I thought Michigan would just pull it out by five. What I do like, and what is most encouraging since the Harbaugh regime has taken over in many years, is I think we're developing a stable of quarterbacks. Not only Shea Patterson looked good, he got Dylan McCaffrey in there in the game. He had about a 60-yard run, good wheels on him. We got a freshman, Joe Milton. So I like that. And then you look at Alabama, you look at Ohio State, those teams that build up big programs, they do it by having a stable of quarterbacks. So spread 7.5. I mean, we lose to Michigan State this week, and then, you know, we're right back in the gutter. It was a home win against a ranked team, but, you know, in retrospect, you know, Wisconsin was not exactly the toughest component. We still got Michigan State at home, or Michigan State on the road, and then at bye week at Penn State, and then it all is going to come down to that game in Columbus. And they stumbled a little bit against Minnesota, some problems in the red zone, but hopefully we'll get back to the good old days when it comes down to the big two and the little, 12?
Yeah.
The big two and the little eight? I can't even keep track now.
The schedule guys know no fan of yours. At Michigan State, at Penn State, at Ohio State? That's tough.
Penn State is home.
Oh, okay.
Penn State
is
home. We got a bye in there, too. So, let's take care of business. I just... Rashawn Gary's a little banged up. That's a little bit concerning. But I like the quarterback. May get Tariq Black back, our top wide receiver. So, you know, Harbaugh's he's keeping his mouth shut, and he's doing the coaching on the field. That's what we all want him to do.
All right, buddy. Talk at you next week. SP Futures up 14. Dow Futures up 140. NASDAQ Futures up 53. Rally on the road here. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed.
PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Brennan Cornan, co-hosting, and he's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 13, Dow futures up 140, NASDAQ futures up 51. At Goldman Sachs now up 228, so that's helping the Dow futures, obviously. Got Apple making a little bit of a bounce. They've been getting whacked for a couple of days, up $1.34. Got Boeing up $1.62. They took a hit after this this thing with Saudi Arabia. We're going to start coming out now. We don't care if they killed those stinking journalists. Come on, do we really care about that? Big guys with money, do we care about stuff like that, Brendan?
No, why should we?
Why should we?
What about human rights? Who cares about human rights? We've got $110 billion worth of arms deals with them.
Yeah, that's right. They had a guy on yesterday, and it's... I would never hurt a person, but if I had a gun, I might have shot the TV. He was into this. This is the greatest deal we've ever cut with anybody. Did Boeing make the... what is it? The F-15 or something? Anyway. I thought he said
F-15 or F-35. Is that?
Well, I know they're making the F-35, but I mean, he was saying something about the line would shut down if we weren't shipping these to Saudi Arabia. Is there anybody have any problem with arming? Does anybody think that this guy is not going to become the next dictator,
or that ultimately he won't turn against us?
Right. Does anybody think that? Do we want him armed to the teeth when this happens?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I have a question. I'll keep it very brief. When it comes to challenges. And, you know, when it comes to being a chief, The hard part about being a chief is getting some quality Braves about you. Correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to be like Chief Wild Eagle in F Troop, where what was his second in command, the running chicken? What was the guy's name? Or running something, scaredy cat, or whatever the hell he was. We pull into his bar in Rolling Prairie, which we've gone from time to time. This nice lady bartender, and she goes, "I remember you from wherever." I mean, I always talk to everybody, so everyone remembers me. Maybe because I'm a big gray haired guy, but so we go to order some chicken wings. Now, Maddie maybe could understand this. And she goes, "Well, how would you like them?" And so JD, my man, well, I used to be able to count on in times like this. He says, "Well, I just, you know, regular barbecue or whatever." Says, "Well, would you like them extra hot? We make them like really hot. Not many people can." So this is a dare at this point, right? There's no doubt that this is whether you belong in this town. We're from Chicago. It's sort of like if you ask some lady, "Where's the elevator?" and she says, "Well, the men take the stairs," and you say, "Where's the elevator?" It's like this was one of these deals, Maddie. And JD, of course, doesn't pick up on it. So no, I'll take the hot ones. I'll see how good they are. And sure enough, they show up and they're pretty hot. And she goes, "How are those?" "Oh, they're great. I love them. I love spicy stuff." They were on the edge. But JD refused to have one, and she, you just see her going humph to that guy. You know, Maddie, you know, these things were so hot, you could eat them okay, but you couldn't pick them up. They were burning your fingers.
Oh, yikes.
There were some serious jalapenos in there. But, of course, I never let on. And actually, you know, they were pretty tasty. But the thought of how could you, after that dare, how could you have cut back and got, "No, give me the mopey ones"? I mean, how could you possibly? Just saying. Even at this age, I realize when, you know, a dare is a dare.
I'll double dog dare you.
Yeah, Ben Maddie's now thinking the chief is more nuts than I thought he was. Would you have gotten the other ones, or have you gone for the hot ones?
I could do either. I'm a big fan of spicy wings.
But she did say, "How'd you like him?" I said, "Well, next time I think I'd get the sauce on the side so I could dip instead of like immerse myself in them."
Yeah, that's probably the right move.
Because I'm sitting there going, I'm burning my fingers with these things. But anyway, it was fun.
Was there water around?
There was plenty of beer. Oh, and what's what's that beer, Manny? It finally went to Indiana? Uberling or something? What's the oldest brewery in the country? In some place in Pennsylvania? Google oldest brewery in the U.S. Well, they finally made. They're only in 15 states, and they finally made it to Indiana. So JD says, "Hey, we got to have something." It was really good. You know, I thought it was real good.
I think it's Oberlin.
Oberlin, yeah.
Is that
something
right?
They're in somewheres
like the college.
Somewheres, Pennsylvania, outside of Reading. Anyway, the stuff was good. No. So, Brendan, you're always my go-to guy when what to a bunch of, shall we say, 2% are lawyers that have all their money in their 401k. Has anything in the last 3 weeks caused anybody to shift even $4 from stocks into something else?
Not yet. I mean, I think there's still a belief that this will everything will be fine. It's not a substantial enough downturn yet to really get worried.
Well, just as a stupid question, sort of like baseball, would you like to pull the pitcher out before he gives up the home run, or would you like to pull your money out before it goes down?
Well, I'd ask you, do you want to pull the pitcher before he gets a ground ball double play, or bring in a reliever who gives up the home run?
Well, that's always a thought. But, I mean, the idea is to pick a guy out one pitch before he gets tired.
Well, you always want to have him, if you're looking at your pitchers, you always want him one pitch earlier than giving up the home run that's going to lose the game. But you don't know from pitch to pitch.
Well, I had a...
And how much belief do you have in the system, and how much belief do you have in your pitcher?
Okay, I had a client come in once, and he was kind of a character. And he had all these stocks that were pretty high-priced for him. He had some Apple, he had some... he even had some Amazon, but it wasn't this high. And I said, "Where do you get all these stocks, just by the way?" And he goes, "Well, you know, I watch TV, and Kramer and Pete Najarian, and these guys tell me to buy this stuff." I go, "Okay, so he bought Apple, I think like an 80 or something. It was a long time ago. And it was trading like 160. And I said, when are you going to sell the Apple if you bought it at 80 and it's down 160? He goes, "Well, I do like I've always done. I sell it when I'm getting hurt." I said, "Okay, so we've already determined, even though we bought it at 80 and it's trading 180, that we're going to sell it at 60. "Well, yeah, that's what I've always done." And I'm like, "Well, we need to turn that bus around a little bit. We probably should be selling it here and then buying it." Of course, it's gone higher, so.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, it was also 10 years. It went way down in the meantime, and then it came back up. But so zero fear at this point among. I mean, and I understand that. Right?
Because I wouldn't say zero fear, but
well,
it's
fear translated in actually doing something.
That's right. Yeah. Is this just a minor correction? Is this a blip, or will there be more of a downturn coming in the near future?
Well, I mean, I'm not grilling because I understand that this is the story, and it's been an 8-9 year story that you just, no matter what it is, if an asteroid's coming in New York, you ignore it and you hope and it'll hit offshore and all of a sudden it's no problem and the market runs right back up. I mean, I get that, but I also know that in 1980, from 71 through 82, all people did was sell the market, and it was the right thing to do and put your money in the bank and things do change. And there were people who could have bought the market at 800. That by the time the interest rates got down to where they decided the market was a better do, it probably was 1600. It probably had doubled. So I mean, I guess why do people? The question is, why do people think that the next 10 years is going to be the same as the last 10 years?
Well, that assumes that you're going to stay in for 10 years as opposed to staying in for another 6 months or a year.
Well, okay. I mean, either way.
At what point does the needle move to the to be the point where you say, okay, now I'm willing to change?
Well, yeah, and I'd like it to be, and I know it's very difficult in 401ks. You can't hedge, which is a problem.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it'd be easier to say to somebody, well, maybe we should hedge the thing a little bit than to say, well, you might as well just get out. But at some point, I mean, why do people think they have to be in? I mean, I'm just general questions that you would ask that I would ask as somebody, well, why do you feel you got $2 million, buddy? Why do you feel every penny's got to be in the market? Well, all it does is go up. Okay, but there's been times when it's gone down. What does your life change if it goes down 20%? Well, yeah, I'd be screwed. Well, okay, then.
Well, see, that's the difference, whether you're looking at for this as a long-term investment or if you're looking for it to live off the cash flow. If you're living off the interest, like with a monthly download to pay your bills, then you're looking at it a little bit differently than if you can play a longer game.
Okay. Now, having said that, and again, I'm giving you grief as a retail trader, but that's okay. You give me grief back. As my buddy Jim, he trades his mother's account through PTI, and she buys, this is before 2006 or 2007, he buys her some Citigroup at like 35 and it's trading 20. Jim says to me that we're in for the long term. Is that what you say when you make a really bad investment? I go, yes,
yes.
It is.
Yes, it is.
But I guess I'm just kind of curious, if you look at markets all the way through the ages, if you were smart enough to actually have cash on the sidelines and somehow be out, and you piled, you had $1 million just sitting under a mattress and you walked it down to PTI or someplace and you plopped it in the market in some mutual fund or an ETF in, May of 2009 and caught the absolute bottom and it rooted all the way up here. How do you not say, you turn on the TV and you find five swinging idiots who get paid by you giving them money. I mean, there's nothing. The moon could be headed for the U.S. Everybody's going to be dead. And they will never say, what you should really do is call me up and take some of the money out of my fund. You'll never get that answer. There's always going to be, no, every time this has happened, it's send me more. I mean, they make 1% on what you give them. Okay, so you can't really trust them at all.
Right.
It's never going to be.
There's a conflict.
Where with me, there's not really a conflict. I might say, hey, if you're bearish, we can do some puts, or we'll lighten up, or we'll trade your stock for a call spread, which is less risk, or something along those lines. Less risk, maybe less reward. Well, definitely less reward. But there's a lot of things, I can do. Okay, so you're never going to get that sort of a. But when I look at it and say, well, if you're that guy, how do you not look at the stuff that's going on around you, interest rates moving up, all these other kinds of things, and say, wow, and look at Amazon down 350 points in 2 weeks, and say, well, boy, this is maybe it's time to be 80% in, or 85 or 90. I'm not saying you should. I never give investment advice. I'm saying how do you not think like that? Not you personally, but if you've ridden this whole way, where do you think it's going to go? I mean, to the moon, Alice?
Maybe.
No, I understand your point. And as at a certain point in time, you've got to say, okay, I've ridden the high this far. Is this going to be somewhere I can cash out, come back in a little later, and make more money because I can buy things low because it's going to be a bigger drop? Or is this just a minor blip that I'm willing to ride out for 6 months or another year or 5 years?
I mean, I totally get the fact that if you're a long-term investor, it's a fool's game to try and time stuff.
Right.
But I also know that the markets go in sometimes 7 to 8, 10 year swings, usually brought upon by the vagaries of the Federal Reserve, virtually all the time. I mean, during the 60s, we went up all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the money supply was going, not every day, but there was a huge swing up, okay? And then there was, when they went back the other way after Volcker, we went way down. When I started the business, we were like 800, Brent.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, so these huge swings, but we basically have gone from 1982, when interest rates were 15%, to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at it and say the only direction for them to go from here
is up.
Is up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that if they go back to 4%, there's going to be a competition, not necessarily to, well, I mean, if a company is take a Procter & Gamble, take a mature company, if a company's trading $100, they're making 10 and sending you a check for 4, I think you're still right in there.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you're one of these, a company that you really think is going to be tremendously successful 2-3 years from now, you're probably still going to be in that one too.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you're in an Amazon, and again, a company that has been tremendously successful stock-wise and in business, and they're not going to give you anything ever. Well, now you've got some competition with that money.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make a difference. And, you know, I'm not so sure that we're not going to see a half a point or a 1% increase one of these months like we used to see. I think these guys are way behind the curve. Now, that's just me. I don't know. What do you think? What is your feel on the Fed, the president basically bitching at the Fed? Where does that grab you?
Well, the president bitching at the Fed is nothing new. I mean, not only for him, but for presidents from time immemorial.
Never to this degree.
You're right. But this is an unusual presidency and a very unusual administration.
That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah.
And it's unpredictable, which is one of the things that he prides himself on, is being unpredictable both in international and domestic politics and fiscal policy.
And some of that's successful, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. It has shaken up things, and there have been things that were totally unexpected in the results that he's gotten so far. How they will continue to play out remains to be seen. But still, I mean, I have to admit that he's had some good consequences to his erratic or unexpected behavior in what he has done.
Well, you have to love the way it shakes up the bureaucrats in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to that part, I cheer the hell out of the guy, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe alone in the closet, but I cheer. I mean, to shake up the European Union. I never saw. We had one of those guys on the air, didn't we, Manny? One of the guys who was on the
European Union guy.
We had one of the guys that Kathy got from. He was a member of the European Parliament at one point. Was he from Finland or someplace? She got that guy. I don't think I've ever talked to a bigger stiff in my life. He was so pissed off at the British politicians about the Brexit because the politicians just didn't explain it to their people the way they were supposed to explain it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Don't people get to decide for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
And that was not his attitude. You have to explain to the rabble how they're supposed to behave. You remember that guy, Manny? He was the biggest stiff we ever had.
I kind of remember that guy, but I don't remember the conversation.
Yeah, I know he was trying to draw stuff out of cardboard, but he was.
By the way, I do have to say before we get too far away from it, we were corrected on Twitter. It was Youngling Beer.
Youngling, yeah, Youngling.
And they're out of Pottsville, Pennsylvania, the world's oldest brewery, a family business, and all females in the top executive positions, according to David from Florida.
Good for them. Good for them. I mean, they didn't bump the guys off, did they?
I don't know.
All of a sudden, they started having these.
They were thrown out of office in a drunken stupor.
What was the one with who the hell was in it? The girl from
that flash dance. So, and where she went around and killed all these guys for their money, and she put poison in one guy's toothpaste tube, and she was doing all kinds of stuff you would never have guessed. You know how she killed the guys. It was an interesting movie. Hmm. Kind of made you shudder.
By the way, if I said world's oldest brewery, that's not. It's no. America's oldest right. brewery.
And the beer was very good.
Beer is pretty old.
Yeah,
beer is pretty old.
You know, it's funny. My brother, who obviously brews beer, and he absolutely loves it. I mean, he's become an expert at it. And he goes, if you go back in history, he goes, it's dramatic that everybody brewed beer, but everybody also had wine. But wine is a very easy process. Where beer is really, it's about a 5 or 6 step process. It's not that easy to brew beer. It's way easier to make wine. You crush the grapes, you let them ferment, and that's basically it, right? I mean, there's more to it, but they pretty much do it on their own, right, Brendan?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, beer, you got to be boiling this and boiling that and this and decam. It's a way more. It's surprising that everybody figured out how to do it like 3,000 years ago. But it's not that easy of a process. Just saying. I should let him explain. He knows more about it than me. But anyway, I thought. They're not in Illinois yet, right, Manny?
I've never seen them in Illinois.
I think they just got in Indiana, and then Indiana.
So they're getting closer.
Yeah, the Hoosiers were happy. It was like, remember when Coors was doing that? They were moving a state, yeah. State by state.
They didn't want to get too far away from their truck routes.
Well, how is it that when you go in a store now, the Coors is all on a shelf? Didn't it used to be refrigerated?
By the way, so they have a map here on their site, and they're in most of New England. They're in New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, all the way through the southeast down to Florida, as far west as Louisiana and Arkansas in the south, and then in the north, as far west as Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee. They're not in Illinois, not in Michigan, not in Wisconsin, not in Missouri, not in Iowa, not Minnesota, and then nowhere west of that.
Interesting, they're in Indiana and Michigan.
Yeah. They're in Ohio and Indiana, but not Michigan.
Well, anyway, it was good.
But they're slowly moving west. So they're now, I mean, it doesn't say here. I'd have to count. But it looks like they're in about 15 states,
that's
maybe.
That's what they said on their site, 15. Yeah. So. But anyway, it was good stuff. And they have a lot of Great Lakes in that little bar, too. Great Lakes, they were like one of the first and one of the best microbreweries, right? Those guys are neat. Yeah, Cleveland?
Yep, Cleveland. I've been to their brewery.
Is it good?
Yeah, it was awesome.
How big is it? Is it bigger than like Goose Island or something?
Probably about the same.
Okay. Those guys, they all went to, I think they all use stainless steel now, don't they? They used to use copper?
I have no idea. You'd have to talk to Dan about that. I don't know.
I don't think, you know what? You know what we could get a really good job as, Brendan, if we could learn how to do it? I don't really even teach us. It's very hard to find a copper welder. Most of those guys are like 80 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know what's so hard about welding copper, but there it is.
Well, just like the guys who fixed the water tanks. You know, the water tanks are on top of buildings all around Chicago.
Yeah.
That really is a dying breed of people who can fix those. And as a result, you've seen a lot of those water towers, which are now being torn down because they cannot be repaired.
Well, for those who remember the horror of 9/11, which is just about everybody, Chicago had at one time, and I'm not sure, other cities must have, as part of the fire retardation in a building, you would have a water tank on top of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So in case there was ever a fire, you could essentially douse it from the roof using mm-hmm. gravity. And when did they get away from that? Because no skyscraper has it. I mean, obviously the pumping has gotten better and the lines from the street. There's no way. I think from my years in the Chicago public schools, the pressure from the street is only good for what? Three floors, maybe four, not so much.
Yeah, I was thinking like four, maybe five, but I think four was pretty much the top.
I mean, if you look at all the school buildings from that era, they're all the same height.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can just make it to, there would be three floors and then maybe a gym. Because at all the schools, get a load of this, one of my jobs every summer, which you had to have a fire test.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a valve up on the roof. So you have to go up on the roof, and there's always like a room up there. Or you have to go in and open up the valve to see if the water made it all the way up there. Because mm-hmm. if it made it up there, you knew it made it far enough for the sprinkler system and stuff. But if it didn't, all of a sudden you had to start pulling pipes out and everything. So we'd have our water test every summer. But you never had a six-story school building built in 1890.
Well, no. I mean, first it was hard to get anything up that high at that point. But also, you know, there was a big change in the construction of schools and buildings after the Queen of Angels fire because they couldn't get the equipment up to save the kids in the school.
Right. But a lot of it was water pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the water doesn't get up there, we're not gonna get there anyway. So Brendan, it is interesting. I keep going back and forth between general stuff that happens and general things that people deal with on a day to day basis and the market, because when you look at, I think what's happened, because the interest rates were, I'm going to say, artificially low for a while, maybe still are, that you have forced people, at least, you know, I mean, they say it on TV all the time, you've forced people outside of their, shall we say, their risk parameters, and they've gotten immune to it because it's worked out okay for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me nervous. When I say that, they'll say your dad would come in, you know, whatever. But your dad would be, he'd be pushing, what, 85 if he was, hopefully he's still, I don't think he's still around, but if he was. And if he'd say, well, I've got, you know, $2 million. Normal world is, in my lifetime anyway, you can get somebody 3% just sitting in a PTI account.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do anything with it. We'll, mm-hmm. we'll pay you 3% or 3.25% or whatever. Well, that's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So you've turned everybody into these investors, and they're chasing this yield. You got people buying junk bonds. When I say junk bonds, not really investor grade, something you would normally never put an 85-year-old person in. You have people doing that because they're paying 6%. Okay, mm-hmm. well, fine. But junk bonds should be paying 12,
mm-hmm.
right, because they're risky.
Right.
You shouldn't be doing something risky for 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the government should be paying you 4 on a 10-year or 4.5 on a 10-year thing. So 6% should be a Boeing bond, for God's sake, not a junk bond. So when I say should be, traditionally has been. So you get to the point where people, you'll say, all right, well, you really need to be in Amazon because it goes up every week. Well, the last thing you want is somebody 85 normally in a stock that pays no dividend, that's run up that much, that's just not the place for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where people find themselves, and you end up finding yourself there, and then it's been moving on. It's one thing for Matty Weber 10 years ago, when the show, 8 years ago when the show started, to put all his money in a growth mutual fund or in a QQQ or something like that, and he's still very young. To the point where I'm going to leave it there for a while. Why should I work? I'm not market timing at age 35 at my retirement stuff. I get that 100%. But the person who never should have been there in the first place, you know, where he was 90% in stocks, traditionally anyway, for that person to say, I'm never getting out of here and dropping back to my normal stuff. I mean, right now, you can get, I mean, at our IB platform, I think we're paying 1.5% or 2%. Okay, so I mean, it's not 3.5, but it's also not 0.
Mm-hmm.
And I put some people in the last couple of months. We go to the auction and we've gotten people treasuries. I don't know if you know that or not, but we've gone and we've gotten people 2.3, 2.4 at a 6-month treasury. Now it's not 3.5, it's not 4, but it's not 0.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some movement here, you know, to where you wonder if. And again, you're very young for your age. You look at me like you're going to last another 20 years. You're still running a marathon, or 30 years. But the point being is, a lot of people your age should be saying, my portfolio does not match traditionally. Should I even take 20% out? And yeah, I'd rather get 3%, but should I get 2.5% for the next 6 months? The time is almost now, Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to go back to at least have the discussion. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not for people 25, 30, 35, but for people who should be, in a normal world, should be 50% fixed income and are no percent fixed income, because mm-hmm. there's been no return for that for the last 8 years. I'm saying the time is you should be maybe 15, 20% that, go out 6 months, get a T-bill at 2.5, and be happy. Mm-hmm. We're getting there, is what I'm saying. I'm not giving investment advice. I'm not telling you what to do. You know I would never do that. But do you agree with me or not? We're starting to get some movement here.
Well, I agree that there's getting to be some movement, and I do think that interest rates will continue to rise. I think the Fed will continue to ratchet up interest rates, despite the political pressure not to do that. I think from an investor standpoint, you know, do you think that you want interest rates to rise so that you can get some return on your investment that you can't get right now?
I think I'm really tired of people giving money to other people for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people charging people 24% on a credit card. Mm-hmm. I have an issue with that.
Yeah.
Maybe because I had a nun for a teacher at one point or something. But to me, that's bizarro world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree or no?
I agree.
And so, yes, I think people willing to lend other people money should get paid for it. Mm-hmm. Duh.
Yeah.
I mean, why should I give you my stuff for free? I don't give you concrete for free, do I? We need money to build a building just like you do concrete.
I agree with you.
And I'm starting to see the world turn here a little bit, and I just don't want my people to be last.
Mm-hmm.
And I run into, and Matty heard this story, so Matty closes ears, but we had a seminar a few years ago, and some guy comes in order to start the seminar, I always go, okay, why is everybody here? What are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. I introduce myself, show the place, show off PTI. And I say, you know, and we have great donuts and things like that. And we even go to Bridgeport to get the one place. I don't know if you ever had these, Manny. They have the rolls with the ham and cheese or the bacon and cheese in the roll. God, are they good.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good.
But they're there to die for. But if you had one every day, you'd be a big fatso. So you can't have another once-in-a-while treat. But anyway, so some guy goes, I'm here to learn how to short the market. I am so bearish I can taste it. So, of course, me being the knucklehead that I am, I said, really? So what are your investments? Well, I got $50,000. I'm gonna put a PTI, and you're going to show me how to short the market. I said, okay. Without going out of school, is $50,000 your total investment? Well, no, I got my 401k. Well, okay, what's in that? Don't give me any numbers, just... What do you mean? That's my 401k. I said, no, I'm asking you what your total investment is. He goes, well, it's a lot more than $50,000. Okay, fine, I'm happy for you. So what are you in your 401k? Well, what do you mean? I said, no, are you all in cash? Are you in bonds? Are you in stocks? Well, I'm all in stocks. Okay. So you're so bearish you can taste it. You're all in stocks. Are you still contributing? Yeah, and the company's contributing too. So yesterday, this is a Saturday, yesterday, you not only are 100% in stocks, but you were a buyer this week. I don't see why you look at it that way. Well, how else would I look at it? You're 100% in stock, and you bought yesterday. And yet here you're telling me you're so bearish you can taste it. I'm just saying it doesn't exactly match. But that's my retirement. I get it. But if you're that bearish, you should call those guys up and say, throw 50% in cash. I'm not telling you to do that. You're telling me that you should think the market's going to zero. If it is, get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, he had no idea what I was talking about. It was like I had two heads, Brendan. if you pull up in a Chevy and you say, I can't believe there's a recall in the Chevy. If you drive it a mile, it's going to blow up. Well, Brendan, you just drove it over here. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's okay. This is my Chevy. It's not going to blow up. I mean, what are you doing? You're the one telling me to say you can't even drive it. You just drove over here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a disconnect here in what people are, their investment versus their feeling. And that'll, you know, that's the one thing you learn as a trader. You can't learn much from traders, Brendan. I mean, other than, They are more likely than other people to say they were wrong, because they're wrong a lot of times. Matter of fact, you're wrong every day a bunch of times, so you get used to it. You know, where most people will never tell you they're wrong no matter what, right? I mean, but one of the things you do is you're used to your portfolio not matching what you would like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I used to trade every option in the OEX, whatever came to me, I traded. So the next morning, I would never go down to the floor on the opening. I'd go down about 10 o'clock, and then I'd stay all the way to 3. Well, 5 hours is plenty. But in the morning, I'd sit there, and I'd say, okay, here's where I want my position to look like. And I would look at my position, my graph, and I'd have stuff in every strike. And guess what? They rarely ever matched. So I would put in 4 and 5 spreads through brokers on the floor to fix my position before I went down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then next day, I'd do the same thing. And so, I think the only lesson here is, if you are getting bearish, if you are worried about the market, all I'm saying is do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, or if you're the age, if you're 25, go have a beer. Find a girl or a guy. That's what people do at 25. Go to a baseball game. Don't worry about it, you know. But if all of a sudden you're retiring or something, and now this is going to be all your money, and you're bearish as hell, and you're 100% in stock, well, for God's sake, do something.
Mm-hmm.
Is all I'm saying. And people are always late to do that. There's a sickness that if you bought a stock at 100, you sold it at 400, the next week it's 405, you feel you lost money. No, you didn't.
No, you gained a lot.
So, I mean, that's my whole lesson here, Brendan. I mean, I know I've been long-winded about it, but...
Well, I mean, that goes back to the point that you made earlier, as far as, you know, is this an aberration in the move in the market downward? Do you get out now? But, you know, if you've ridden for a long time, then you're kind of playing with the house money right now. Are you willing to take a little bit of a hit right now or ride it out a little bit longer in hopes that it'll go back up? You're not, to use the example that you had before, you know, I'll sell it when it hurts me, so that if I bought it at 80, I'm going to sell it when it gets to 75, even though it's at 160 now. It doesn't hurt yet. You know, it's kind of the same argument that you're going to make. You know, do you look at it, a drop from 160 to 155 as getting hurt, or do you wait until it goes to 75?
I'm going to say one thing here. To all out there, again, I very seldom put out a platitude that I say, this is something you really need to think about. Don't ever remember what you paid for anything.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no difference.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, I agree with you. And that was the point, that, you know, with the example you gave earlier, when the guy was willing to sell when he gets hurt, it was at his sale price. The example you gave was at his sale price. And, I mean, but there's, in your example, if you bought it at 80, went to 160, looking at it dropping a little bit now is okay for many people in the market, because they've made so much money that it's not that much of a hit yet. If it goes down another 1, 2, 5%, then maybe, and it's time to say, okay, I'm gonna cut my losses now, because even though it's not a loss, it's a loss for what would have been last week.
If you have one other lesson from a trader, mark yourself to market every day.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, Matty?
Mark yourself to market every day?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
If you walk in and IBM is the core of your position, and this morning IBM is, last night it closed at 141.13, that's the price of IBM. Whether you paid 160 or 110, it makes no difference. So if tomorrow it's 135, you just lost $7. It doesn't matter whether you bought it at 100 and it's the house's money. It's your money.
Got it.
It's don't where you bought it is nothing but historical acronym.
That's not easy to do, by the way.
No, it is not. It is absolutely not easy to do. Dr. J, years and years ago, a friend of his from when he was on Fox, I think, this guy was involved in some station, and he's got his mother's portfolio. And they were part of the IPO, Brendan, I think. The stock came out at 20 and it's trading 65, and he was thinking about hedging it. So I explained to him I could do this puts, I could sell some calls, but I was essentially going to put him in a protected index program. But the stock was fairly volatile. So 4 days later, I don't hear from him. So I call him up and I go, hey, you know, what are we going to do? Well, stock's now down to 55 from 67. And he says, well, we're going to wait till it comes back up. Besides, we're still up 35. And I said, well, that's where you and I have a little bit of a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
I said, when you first showed it to me, it was 65. You think you're up 35. I think we're down 7 because we didn't do anything. And I think I'm the one who was right.
Yep.
Because from when I saw it, it was 65. Now it's 57. We snoozed. We losed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it wasn't like, you know, he didn't realize that 65 was pretty darn high and want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't pull a trigger, and now it's 57.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to pull a trigger here. Well, let's wait till it goes back to 65. I don't think it ever did. I think it went toast, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he got out somewhere, but I lost track of him. But it's all about when you see it.
Yeah.
You know, when you start it. And so if you're stacked, don't ever shoot me, Brendan. Don't ever use the term house's money. So even in the casino, if you can pick up your money and walk out without security coming after you, it's not the house's money, it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And that term, I know, Matty, you've used it a few times, you can't think that way.
I would agree.
And but you know what? If I'm in a casino, I think that way. I'm up 50. I'll hang a little longer. I mean, everybody does it.
I came in with 25 bucks. I've got 75 now. I can lose 50 and still break even.
Still break even. You know, everybody, I'm not saying I don't think that way. I just know when I do, I catch myself and say, don't be an idiot, you idiot.
Yeah.
It's not like everybody doesn't make the same mistakes, Brendan.
I know. Does. In casinos,
in
get
trading.
Rich because of, and traders get rich the same way.
Well, I mean, professional traders make the. How many mistakes are there? Four? You know, doubling down on bad money, not selling when you know it's a sale. I mean, you know, all those kinds of things. There's only like there's like five mistakes. Everybody does them, you just keep doing it over and over again at a bigger level.
Yeah.
I mean, you see these guys like the BlackRock, those two idiots, not BlackRock, Ackerman and the other guy fighting over the. One guy was short the thing and the other guy was long the thing. Ackerman and. Who's the other guy? He was on yesterday all day long. Carl something something. Anyway, but one guy was long, one guy was short. I mean, they were like a rookie trader. I got everybody's money involved in this. I need justification. I'm not worried about investment. I have to show the world I was right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you start doing that, well, you're not a trader anymore.
Ego.
Yeah.
It's all ego.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the Bears. Maddie, what was with the holding penalties on Khalil Mack? No holding penalty.
He's got a bad ankle. This could be trouble.
Really? I mean, but how did he? I don't know. I mean, it seemed to me that the referees were a little wild on Sunday.
Well, that call on Trey Burton, which called back a touchdown, and then on the next pass, the next play, Trubisky threw an interception in the end zone. That was a bad call.
I thought the second unnecessary roughness call on Leonard Floyd, where he appeared to tap the quarterback on the helmet, which he didn't. He whiffed on the quarterback, and even if he did, it was, I mean, the most non-egregious penalty ever. That was a big call. I agree with Chief. I saw at least three holds against Khalil Mack that went uncalled, and there's probably more. Now, they say there's holding on every play, and I get that, but those were, I mean, very obvious ones, I thought. And that being said, you know, the Bears turned the ball over three times and played zero defense, especially in the second half, and it's hard to win when you do that, especially on the road. And they missed a game-winning kick.
Yeah.
Which to give a guy one from that distance, who do you think you have? You know, the Holy Ghost back there?
Well, when
Robbie
I'm watching,
Gold?
Yeah, I was going to say, when I'm watching Robbie Gold just drill field goal after field goal last night in the cold, it's a little frustrating. But, no, I agree. A 53-yarder on the road like that is probably a 50-50 shot. The way the offense was moving the ball in the second half and in overtime, it was unfathomable to me that they got so conservative at that point in the field. They ran it three times into the pile and then kicked the field goal. It made no sense.
Remember reading this once, Maddie, and I don't know where, you probably could find it because you're good at this stuff. There are actually specific things that each referee on the field is supposed to watch out for.
Yeah, they've got a little zone of the field that they're looking out for.
And if my memory serves me correct, the referee who stands behind the quarterback, it's his call for the delay of game. It's his call for anything to do with the quarterback in terms of
roughing the passer.
Illegal motion, roughing the passer. But I also think that he's in charge of the left tackle in terms of holding on that side. Because on one side, the head linesman doesn't move. And he has the other tackle, and he has the offside and all the other stuff. The umpire, I think, who's not in the middle of the field anymore, but he used to be in the middle of the field. He was in charge of holding for the interior lineman, as I recall. Now, if you're constantly not feeling that your left tackle is being, the left tackle is holding your best pass rusher, that's the referee's call, I believe, or non-call in this case. But he was allowing Khalil Mack to get clotheslined and everything over there on every play, I thought.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
But that's one guy's call. It's not like all of a sudden the umpire is going to see it and throw the flag. It's not. It's one person the whole way, I think. SP Futures up 13.25. NASDAQ Futures up 51. We need to have a referee in here, Manny, to tell us all about this stuff. Dow Futures up 139. Be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howley. Mr. Brendan Cornan, Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures now up 19. Putting a whip to this, which is, that's pretty good. Dow Futures up 196. Maybe, who knows, maybe over up to over more 200 when we're done with the show. NASDAQ Futures up 69. We've got Goldman Sachs after their earnings. They're up $3, which isn't that much, 1.5%, but we've got everybody else in the Dow going here. We've got Caterpillar up 170. We got Boeing up 312. We got Apple up 170. We got a bunch of stuff moving. Morgan Stanley's the other one that beat. They're up $1.13 to 44.60. So, you know, it's not a huge move, but everything's positive. First time in banks. And, well, now all the other banks, when it came up higher after their earnings, they ended up a day lower. So we'll see. The last few days, people want to sell these rallies. I'm not saying they're going to sell this one, but that's been the program here. Maddie, why don't you do traffic, weather, sport? No, I got the stuff. Give me a second. For God's sake, give me a second here. When do the Bulls start, real quick?
Well, Thursday.
Thursday.
NBA opens tonight with a doubleheader. Then the majority of the league is in action tomorrow, and then for whatever reason, the Bulls don't start till Thursday.
I've got DAX up 87. These things are starting to move now. That's 0.7%. FTSE still not much. Only up one. Call that flat. But CAC around up 40. FTSE, what's her name? Theresa May is involved in this Brexit thing. And this is a tough week for her. I mean, she's fighting with the people over in Europe. It's a question of how much of an example they want to make of Britain before she says, screw you guys. And I think they might almost be getting to that point, Brendan. I'm not sure. NICAP 277, that's a full 1.25%. They have been getting hammered. The whole number there is 22,549. We can remember numbers in, what, the 28th, Matty? Not that far long ago. Shanghai still down again, down 21,2546. Hang Seng up 17, so that's flat. So not much movement there. Those guys have been 30,000 in the Hang Seng or 25,462. So they're still in, pretty close to long-time lows. Oil down 37 cents. Brent down 39. The spread is almost exactly $9. Natural gas 324. RBOB gas 194. We have gold up a little, up 420. Silver up 13. So they've made some pretty good moves here. We'll see if they keep going. David thinks they might. We will see. Manny, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash out in the western suburbs blocking the right lane of the Reagan Memorial I-88 inbound side just before I-355. So a very busy area out there, and it's causing stop-and-go traffic, as you can imagine. That crash happened about 30 minutes ago. It's been cleared. Still some crews out on the scene, but significant delays on I-88 heading inbound right near I-355. So keep that in mind. Other area of concern up in the North Shore, Tri-State Tollway, I-94 northbound, just before Route 137, which is Buckley Road. There is a crash causing stop-and-go traffic as well. That's blocking the right lane on the northbound side of the Tri-State. Everything looking okay otherwise as far as accidents are concerned, but high travel times on the Kennedy and Eisenhower specifically. Stevenson looks relatively normal for this type of morning. Same with the Dan Ryan I-57 and the Bishop Ford. Weather today, lots of sunshine, cool temps, turning mild this afternoon. We'll reach a high of 57 with sunny skies. Right now it's crystal clear and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 69 today. Very mild for John and friends down in the Valley of the Sun. Right now it's clear and 61. In sports, Monday Night Football last night, it was Green Bay over San Francisco 33-30. Bears remain in first place, percentage points ahead of Green Bay and Minnesota, who are tied for second. National League Championship Series, Brewers are up 2-1 over the Dodgers. They beat L.A. in L.A. 4-0. And that's it. Chief.
What do you make of so far?
Of baseball?
Baseball.
To be honest, when the Cubs got eliminated, I haven't been watching it as closely. I was a little depressed after the Cubs really stopped hitting.
Aren't you the sports information director of Stacks and Jacks?
I am. I still have been following it. I can tell you this. The Red Sox and the Astros both have the scariest lineups you can imagine. And those watching those two teams go back and forth is pretty fun to watch. The Brewers have won something like 13 of their last 14 games or something like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They're going to be tough to beat, and they have a great lineup. None of these teams have the dominant pitching that you would expect.
And now Sale is hurt.
And now, yes.
Well, he was hospitalized for a stomach ailment.
Which is interesting. And, he wasn't great in game one. David Price really struggled.
Yeah, but Price has always struggled in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He is not a postseason pitcher.
He hasn't been.
He's like 0-9 in his career, and out of 11 starts, he's 0-9, which is not the guy you want on the mound when you're talking about a key game in the playoffs.
Yeah, you have to think that Houston maybe has the best starting rotation with Verlander and those guys, but man, all four of these teams can really hit, even though the Dodgers were shut out last night. So it's been good, and certainly no sweeps in the championship series.
But can you imagine the powers that be looking at the Astros and the Brewers in the World Series from a marketing standpoint and a TV audience standpoint?
Yeah, definitely not what they want. They want they want Dodgers and Red Sox all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The
You think so? I mean, I think it's as much as it used to be.
I do.
Oh, yeah. I do,
too. I think it's even more so. Because baseball, I think, used to be more of a national sport. Now, people only watch if their team is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they always want the big city, big marquee names.
Yep.
Now, Houston's obviously a big market. I don't know how big of a sports city it is as far as the Astros are concerned. Probably, well,
I don't know how
probably
much
not
baseball
that small.
I don't know if it's that much of a baseball city. You know, I think football down there would be really, really big. But I don't think as much of a baseball. I mean, obviously, when you think about college and high school baseball, it's tremendous. You know, it's similar to Friday Night Lights type stuff, and you see a lot of great players come out of Texas. But I don't think from a Major League Baseball standpoint that it's very well recognized.
Yeah, I think there's only a handful of national teams remaining in baseball: the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs. Maybe the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you get a chance to get one or two of those teams in the World Series, that's what you want.
That's right.
You're going to get their whole local market, but then you're also going to get some national market.
Well, mm-hmm. John, how are you?
Good morning.
Let's follow this up a tad, because I brought the subject. You weren't here. I brought up with Jay-Z was here, Maddie, but what your opinion. Why the baseball, at some point, football, and I don't know if you could pick somebody, some marketing guy, if Jordan was here. At some point, they crossed the, the Rubicon? It almost doesn't matter in terms of ratings, even though people say it does. It almost doesn't matter in terms of ratings who's in the Super Bowl. I mean, almost. I mean,
it pretty much doesn't. You're
I
right.
Mean, mm-hmm. I mean, they
it's
would
an event unto itself.
But they would always rather have, you know, the you know, if they could get the Bears playing, Boston maybe, or if you could get, you know, the New York Giants if they were any good, you know, I mean,
Dallas Cowboys are a big draw.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you still would have your choices, okay? But when it comes right down to it, you actually look at the ratings of the Super Bowl. I don't know that there's that much difference, and yet football has managed to do that, and they have stayed on free TV, and that's their model. Okay, now whether I'm not saying it's right, wrong, or you know, up the behind. I'm just saying that's their model. Now baseball has gone absolutely the other direction. I mean, all these playoff games are on. I mean, I think most people that have even the base playoff pack or cable package probably have TBS. So that's an easy one,
right?
But not a whole lot of people have Fox Sports. Or TBS. What's the TBS second station?
TNT.
What's the other one that these games have been in? When they had two of them going at the same time.
Well, I think they've always had one on a Fox affiliate and one on a Turner affiliate.
But I'm saying TBS.
And then they had some ESPN stuff earlier in the playoffs.
Right, but what I'm saying is, you know, I'm not a cable junkie, even though I have it. I think if I get the basic package, you know, the 10 stations plus local, I'm probably going to get TBS, right? I'm going to get USA.
I think you're right. Yeah,
I'm going to get TBS. I'm going to get USA. I'm going to get CNBC. I'm going to get Fox News. That, you know, that sort of stuff. The next chunk up, I get the. I think I get TBS. Whatever the next, because it wasn't on TNT. It was on. Because they have four stations when they had the Olympics.
Well, when they have NCAA basketball or the Olympics, they use TBS, TNT, True TV, is the third one.
Okay.
And then that's it for the Turner stations.
Okay,
and then he owns CNN, I think, as well, or he used to anyway.
Well, what I'm saying is, you have, unless you had cable, just say baseball has gone the other direction. Everything is on cable, even though TBS I'd call easy cable.
So my question to you would be, has baseball become a local only sport because of that reason, or did they migrate to cable only TV because they know that it's a local only sport?
I'm thinking maybe you're right. And my guess is that football, and John, please opine, football has not or baseball has not reached the point where you want the biggest population places to have the teams. Well, now, but actually, Houston's got almost as many people as Chicago or Philadelphia now, so it's not like...
Well, it's got more than Philadelphia, yeah. And it's coming close to Chicago.
So it's not like... It's almost the legacy
not
team.
Not the metro, I don't think, but the city limits, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying it's almost to the point now where, you know, it's not just population. It's who follows the teams outside.
Yeah, it's getting mm-hmm. the national market because you know you're going to get the local market for the most part, but you want a national team that's going to draw, you know, other outside your local market.
Which is what the Cubs and the Braves did when they went national with their superstations.
Somehow though, the Braves never. I don't think
the Braves definitely ever, agreed that was true in the 90s.
In the 90s, right?
But the Braves never caught on as a national team since then.
That's right.
Right. Why do you suppose that is?
I don't know.
I think part of it was that they didn't keep performing. You know, in the 90s when they had Glavine and Maddux and that whole pitching
rotation.
The Cubs
never performed.
No. But the Cubs were one of the few stations that had the lovable losers type
right.
of a thing.
Plus and, they always and, had great announcers.
And yeah, Harry Carey and Steve Stone sold the whole Wrigley Field experience where it became sort of a... It didn't matter if they were winning or losing for a long time there in the 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. which is weird, but that how they were able to accomplish that. Whereas the Yankees and Red Sox were a national draw because they were so good every year.
Yeah, but in the Cubs' case, it was them and the Braves on superstations, so they could infiltrate different parts of the country when cable first started coming around. And they had a foot up on that. They had a leg up on getting that into the marketplaces in different parts of the country. And there was a story to sell with the Cubs. You know, how much longer are they going to lose? What are they going to do this year to lose it, like in 69? Yeah, I mean, they had a history there, but they were also everywhere. And they were there in the daytime. You know, they had day games for so long. Kids would come home from school and they could watch the game. So
we think alike, but I was going to say, even though everybody poo-poos day baseball, even Joe Madden, and, of course, you want your crowd at night because you get the business people in the skybox. I get all that. But I'm going to say, and John from Arizona, which is a huge Cubs contingent, I'm going to say that when they were on in the afternoon in 50 states, in every saloon, in the afternoon for 4 hours, they had absolutely undivided attention mm-hmm. for sports countrywide.
And even if you didn't watch the game in the afternoon, you'd go home and you'd turn on the 6 o'clock news and you would hear the results of the Cubs game. You knew what happened. You could see some highlights, and you would know about it. It wasn't like, games on the West Coast, which if you're on the East Coast end at 3 a.m. East Coast time and you don't know what happened about it, you're not really aware of it on a daily basis. I think that has something to do with it too.
Well, once in a while when I actually used to get a vacation, I would drive, you know, in the summertime we'd drive someplace and, we were playing golf or whatever we were doing. You pull into some local bar on the way to Eagle Ridge. It's 2 p.m. There's the Cub game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, there's 20 people in there watching it. And mm-hmm. it was I don't know that anybody's ever had such a, shall we say, a stage where nobody else was on it.
Mm-hmm.
Than afternoon baseball.
And the thing is, once you start getting kids hooked when they're 8, 9, 10 years old and start collecting the baseball cards, they will be a fan of that team until the day they die. And that's one of the things that I think the Cubs did. Now, Manny raised an interesting point that the Braves, even with their superstation, with the Turner superstation, didn't have the same results that the Cubs did.
Because they were night games. They were just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. But they were a superstation that reached throughout the country the way the Cubs did before other stations like Yes and the Dodger station started to infiltrate. But, you know, the Cubs were at the right point at the right time with the WGN Superstation.
Our question for John, if he knows, and Manny was supposed to know because he's also our media guy. If you got WGN on and the Cubs are on 25 years ago in a 120 game and there's 20 guys sitting there in a bar in Oklahoma watching, how do you ever count those people? Can you?
Do you count them? Is that what
I mean, how do count them for what? What are you talking about?
I mean, how do your advertisers know they're there? How do you get rewarded for having them? That was that for a question.
It's just how they've always done those. It's a survey.
But I'm saying, how would the
You're, they're not going to get counted unless one of them gets the survey.
But I'm saying I never when you look at the Cub games, I've never seen. I'm not in the industry, but I've never seen more than they got a 2% Chicago share. In the afternoon, I never read
But we think another million idiots swilling beers around the country are watching in bars in Montana. I've never seen that. I'm sure somebody must have some kind of clue, but how would you even count that? But obviously they count. If you're doing beer commercials, they count.
Well, it's probably one. It's probably cheap, so it doesn't cost them a heck of a lot to take that chance, if you will. And obviously, it's directed towards that beer swilling guy in Montana or whatever, as far as the commercials go.
But I'm saying, how would you have any idea on the cable elsewhere how many people pick you up?
If you're a national station, your survey is national.
But the Cubs used to just go to the satellite and get picked up locally.
But when they were on the Superstation, which they barely are now anymore.
I think they barely are.
There's only like maybe five games a year that are truly national on WGN. They were part of any sort of cable rating survey. So if you were in Oklahoma, like you said, and you were watching the Cubs game and you got one of those surveys, you would fill out that you watched it, and it would count just like anything else.
All right, so you weren't lost.
No, but I mean, it's just all dependent. I've never got one of those surveys in my life.
Yeah, I never trusted those things anyway. So,
but it was a sample size that was used for advertising, and it's still pretty much used to this day. Although they can track a lot of streaming and things like that.
Well, I'm saying when a Boston is on at 12 o'clock, okay, and this is the Patriots because Maddie and I frequent a Boston bar. Now, if they're on at 3:30, they're national most of the time, right? Because not all the time, because there's 2 3:30 games, right?
Yeah, but typically they're national. Typically they're on national. At 3:30,
and at night they're on.
Especially if you're an East Coast team, you're usually national at 3:30.
So if they're on at 12 o'clock, they're just local, correct? Just like the Bears would be at 12 o'clock.
Not always, but most of the time, yes.
Well, what's the national 12 game?
They have there's a national 12 game, sometimes.
Okay.
Right, but so usually not. Usually you're local.
All right, so if it's only in Boston at 12 o'clock, if you walk into the Tripoli Tap, there's 100 swinging idiots in there watching it because they can't get any other place. Correct?
Correct, if it's a local game, yep.
And now, how are those guys counted? They're not, I don't think.
Probably not. Unless they could have got a survey saying, of what they watched, I guess it's irrelevant.
They would still
pay for it or not. That's what they watch.
Why would they not be counted? They're watching CBS or Fox at a certain time.
Okay,
they're still counted. Why would they not be counted? Why would it be any different?
Right.
Well, I mean, how are they going to know? In other words,
they get a survey. What did you watch from 12 to 3? I was watching CBS.
Right.
They don't have any surveys they send out anymore.
Well, whatever they're doing to track cable ratings,
but I mean,
it's no different.
Your TV has always been, correct me if I'm wrong here, your TV has always been some people who put the thing on their TV, right, and let them know who's watching.
Well, that's what I mean by a survey. If I don't know if bars get those, but if you went to your buddy's house who had the NFL package and he had one of those on there and you're watching CBS, then that's what you got.
So you're saying if you actually have the cable, there's no need for the thing. They know what you're watching.
I think so.
They don't have many people in front of the TV.
This has probably changed a lot over the years.
Yeah.
I don't know the latest and greatest, but at its core, it's a survey. And
add this to our list, man. What do we need? We need a guy that does taxes. We need a guy that does. We got about six people.
You wanted a referee?
Well, yeah. We had a. Speaking of which, talking about funny stories, the guy from the Jan. We used to make one road trip a year for the University of Illinois from the OEX pit, believe it or not, because one of the guys went to Illinois and he was a fanatic Illinois fan. So we fly down to Columbus. It is raining like you'd swore you were in Hurricane Michael. We get off the plane, there's like one cab and there's like four of us, and there's another guy standing there. He goes, hey, can I ride with you guys? And of course everybody's grumbling. Well, I'm the tallest guy, so I grab the front seat and I say, yeah, come on in, right? So four guys pile the back seat on each other's laps. Well, as soon as my guys were incredibly sports nuts, they were worse than Maddie, and all of a sudden they find out this guy is going to be the referee for the game the next day. You could have sworn they were ready to buy this guy's shots in the back seat. He was spectacular. Did you know that the referee, the head linesman, and I think the back judge work as a team? I don't know why that is, Maddie. And the other they can fill the other guys in around him, but those guys have to be a team. Why do you suppose that is? I mean, they all look this, like they all got their own same spot out there, but those are the three most important guys. I guess you could dump any umpire out there and have him watch the center guard and the other guard. And somehow or another, those three people have to coordinate, and the other ones don't. Do you have any idea why that is? I don't. I don't know enough about it. But
I don't even know if that's true.
Well, at this time, there it was, because he was from Wisconsin. He was an accountant. He was the back judge. Because I always work with the same head lineman and the same referee. Because the other guys fill in. You never know who you're going to get every week. Weird, huh? But this is a long time ago. But maybe now they all work in the team. I don't know. They could, maybe. But he went through the whole list of all the different coaches. And he goes, Bo would rant and rave, Bo Schembechler on every play. But once the play was over, he would never, 20 minutes later, tell you about a play 20 minutes ago. Once that play was over, it was over. So he was okay to deal with, even though he was yelling the whole time. Because Lou Holtz ran up and down the sidelines like a madman, so when you needed him, you could never find him. But the other guys, he said they're still whining in the second half about something in the first half. Even if you think you're wrong, what are you going to do about it? You know, so every coach, he was fascinating. You know, talking about this play and that play and this game and why this is long before replay and everything and how guys, you know, totally butcher a call and the other guys are trying to get him to change it. It was pretty interesting. Anyway. So, John, well, real quick.
Or have a makeup call?
Yeah, or a makeup call, yeah. John, what about this market? Now, we were up yesterday, 144 points at one point. We go down, we come back. On the close, we drop 150 or 1.5 in the S&Ps, which is 15 right. points in the SPOOs. We closed down what about $1.70 from when we were up at 245. Now all of a sudden we're $1. We made that back plus another 20 cents. We're right back to where we were yesterday at 230. Now are we gonna sell off from here now, or what are we gonna? I mean, this is becoming kind of crazy world the last few days.
It's more of the same, but I think today will meander up a bit. To be honest with you, Tom.
What do you make of the? After another 2 days, we're not going to worry about this guy in Saudi Arabia. All be okay there. We'll all go right back where it was.
Well, they have a knack for just working through everything, regardless of what's real out there. So
if you're the head of the French oil company, do you really care about this this writer that got killed?
Probably not. So.
I mean, you would personally, but. I get the feeling.
Right, right.
Now the Saudis went from they were rogue agents to the fact that his death was a mistake. They were just supposed to torture him. That's the latest, right, Manny? Something along those lines.
I don't know.
Some kind of James Bond thing, right?
Well, do you believe the guy had allegedly he had the Apple Watch on that there's audio of the whole thing? You want to hear how the guy was getting tortured and killed?
Is that the story now?
That was the story, that there was an Apple Watch involved.
I heard about the recording, but I didn't know if it was something in the room or...
Evidently, see if that's still... Google it real quick. That's still a story, right, that the Apple Watch kept recording?
That's what I heard, too.
If you wrote fiction like this, could you sell a book?
That makes good fiction, right, and it's real, huh?
It's a... So this guy, I mean, is anybody...
The latest headlines are experts doubt reports that the Apple Watch recorded his death.
Okay.
But you know, still nothing confirmed.
No, nothing confirmed, yes or no. But now, of course, if we're willing to go, it's the Saudis' idea that it didn't really happen. We have to get rid of the recording somehow, too, right? We can't have the recording. It can't
that
be
would
like
be the case.
Can't be like the police should... All right, Jan, we only have 30 seconds. What do you think? Gold still going up? And... Well, still hanging in here, and the market going up or what? You got 20 seconds, and tell us which way to go.
Market going meandering up. I think gold took a nice clip up, but might level before its next rise.
All right, buddy. We'll talk at you on Friday. Have a nice week.
You got it,
Brandon. Thank you very much, Matty. Good job as usual. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3900.
3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.